The future. A relentless, desperate wasteland ravaged by nuclear war. With the destruction of the internet and search engines such as Google, accurate information about the past is traded like currency. Two brave travelers are commissioned with the dangerous task of going back through time to gather as much information as they can to find out about the late 20th and early 21st centuries in hopes that a future society may rebuild what was lost and avoid the horror of a smoldering radioactive planet. But there is a catch. The travelers' journey back across eons of time is a one-way trip, leaving them stranded in the past.
Wait, what?
There's no way to communicate their findings to the future other than burying reinforced time capsules in the ground.
Are you serious?
In the hopes that one day recordings such as these will be unearthed to provide a glimpse of the world that once was.
All right.
This is the mission of the crispy coated robots, and it must succeed.
Hey, it's Jim.
Hey, it's Joseph.
Yeah, it doesn't sound effeminate at all, Joseph. And this is George. Welcome to episode of Crispy Coated Robots 183.
Wow.
183. And today is a very special episode because we are talking about famous comedians. But many super famous comedians have been launched by Saturday Night Live. And that's where we're diving into. But the there we go. That's a great song.
I'm looking surprised, like I didn't see the camera. I'm going, oh, hi.
Oh, there you go.
George Pageant. Yeah. Joseph Johnson.
Nice.
But, Jim Kovacic. It's time for Crispy Coated Robot. Here's your host, George, Jim, and Joseph.
All right,
musical guest Caitlin.
Caitlin presents. But you know, they've launched so many comedians into the big leagues, but we don't often focus on female comedians. They don't always get the recognition they deserve, but today on this podcast, they will. So
thank
from Gilda Radner to Cicely Strong to the women of SNL, they have set themselves apart as the king and, well, the queens, I guess, of comedy. And then the second topic.
We're doing, just got to make that clear, we're doing characters they've created.
Characters, yes.
SNL
yes,
characters
about
created by
damn
females.
Time.
Yes. We're not celebrating them themselves.
We're not ranking them but, against each other, the characters.
Right. But their performances on the show. So many of them have gone off and done movies, and those are great. But we're talking about characters and performances in the show that we just think that the future needs to know about. Second topic, TV incidental music.
Yes.
Our musical cues. Either
one. These are like the shorter bumpers. Yeah, it's all led up to this.
You know.
But television programs, they have these little stingers. They call them stingers. And they kind of mold the tone and identity of a show. So it kind of it livens the show. It takes a kind of a dry segment change and then captivates it with these
becomes part of the fabric of the show, almost you expect it in certain kind of situations, especially in older sitcoms.
It shows the power of sound because the audience may not be like overtly recognizing it, but it's there. It's the mood. Like
it can be subtle. You're right. And done well, you don't even realize that it's happening when it's happening.
Or so. It can be way less subtle, which kind of my list is. Yeah. Not subtle at all.
Not so subtle.
We're setting this up and you're going to laugh. Dang it.
Yeah.
you know, it's coming.
It's like almost like the cue for a laugh track on some of these. You know, it's like, oh, this is supposed to be funny. Why? Because the music's telling me.
Yeah.
Funny music. So let's go ahead and start with, let's go to the SNL characters played by females, and we'll do number five with you, Joseph. What you got?
Oh my gosh. You know, this list was really hard, I got to say, because there used to be a time where people were like, you know, it was a male dominated show. They had all the best characters and all that. But I would argue for probably the last 10 to 15 years that I think the female characters have been funnier. Just overall.
More
More memorable. So mine comes from debuted in 2004 by Rachel Drath, and this is Debbie Downer.
Oh, number four.
This is such a good one. Talk about laugh track. You know, if people are still not, you know, understanding what it is, they have the wah wah wah
musical,
you know,
cue right there.
Yeah, musical cue. So it comes in both lists, you could say. But really, Debbie Downer is fantastic. And this was something that came back. She did it, I want to say, like 6 or 7 times and all that. But this was a character that the first one is probably the most popular one. Lindsay Lohan was the host. And they were at Disney World, the happiest place on earth. And basically you have a scene where a group of friends are all at an eatery. And they're just talking about, you know, how great the day is. And Debbie Downer is the one that will bring up stuff like her cat has AIDS. You know?
It's great doing the horn on that one. It's instead of just a regular horn, it's like a cat.
And it's so good. I mean, the character's so funny. And part of it is that the stuff that the writers come up with just has the actors in stitches. They cannot hold a straight face with it.
Oh, yeah.
So Debbie Downer is my number 5. Jim, it's your number 4. So she goes on the board.
Yes. Very nice. Nice.
And I think what works with this character is we all know somebody like this.
Oh yeah.
You know, you all have that friend that, is just like, you know, he or she comes
bringing it down,
and you have to psych yourself up to engage with them and kind of deflect that negativity and stuff. But
George,
that's a good one. This was on my honorable mention. So during 2008-2009, the season 34 of SNL, 3-time Emmy Award nominee Kristen Wiig appeared in more sketches than any other member of the cast, 124 sketches. My guilty pleasure, and I don't even know if you boys have seen this, it is a character by the name of Donese, and it's D-O-O-N-E-E-S-E. And the thing is, she's got these little tiny hands, and she is the unbearably creepy sister female singing group, okay, on the Lawrence Welk type program. And they're singing, you know, the three attractive sisters are very flirtatious and, you know, like the 70s and late 60s. And then she's got this huge forehead.
Yes.
Tiny little like doll hands that they have, you know, coming out of her sleeves. And then this weird tooth. And each sister, they take a turn to sing, you know, what they like and everything. And then when it comes to Donese, she will sing of something about these pranks, but each time they get to her, the prank gets more and more dangerous. You know, it's just a favorite of mine. I actually show this to people. I'll like, here, look at my phone, you know, and they just look at me like, who are you? Get away from me.
I think I could have, we could have done a category, you know, if The Office was sent down on the top 5 Kristen Wiig characters, and we would still have a ton to pick from, because this is on my honorable mention.
Like the Target lady, she's got so many, but exactly. I'm surprised, makes me laugh, you know, all the time.
In 2000, that the Lawrence Welk show became a skit. I would like to be there for the pitch meeting. Like, you know, hey, Lawrence Welk, you know, even though they show it on PBS reruns, it's like,
right,
definitely to pitch that. That's not anything hip, but it ended up working in the long run because it's just great. Funny.
But that's my number 5. Wig is Donese.
My number 5 is a duo, and it's a kind of a ripoff of the Bill Murray Lounge Singer character. Two sisters named the Sweeney Sisters. It is Jan Hooks and Nora Dunn, who kind of did the same thing, Bill Murray's thing. But one of the funniest skits, I think, is when Paul Simon is in the audience at one of their shows, their lounge acts, and they're singing just a medley of his songs, screaming in his face like a bridge over a cup of water and stuff like that. But they had plenty of skits. They did kind of like took off where Bill Murray left off with the lounge singer, played Jails and all this kind of crazy stuff where they would show up and sing. And I think it was one of those things, too, because it was one of the characters besides John Lovitz's Liar that kind of helped bring SNL back from the disastrous Robert Downey Jr. Anthony Michael Hall season when they brought in Jan Hooks and all these folks. So I think they were pretty important in the history of SNL, especially proving that females are funny again after that terrible season when they had all those and they had like Joan Cusack on there and a bunch of people.
Oh, yeah.
So Sweeney Sisters is my number five female characters on SNL. Now we move to the great topic of incidental or, as we say, music cues that are featured in TV shows or, you know, yeah, definitely TV shows. Not we're doing movies, but that's called a score for TV shows. Joseph, what's your number five?
So my number five comes from Friends. Okay. It's the episode titled The One Where Rachel Breaks Up with Ross. The reason why I chose this as my number five is because this is an actual song. Okay. So I know I can't play it all for you, Jim, because we're going to get in trouble here.
Yeah.
But it's sort of making fun of the incidental music itself. And it goes along with the gag. And I thought, wow, this works really well. So we're just going to listen to a snippet of it.
Yeah.
Jim, I promise not to do the whole thing, but just a snippet of the song itself. And this is the one of U2's With or Without You.
Music. The next one's dedicated to Rachel from Ross. Rachel, he wants you to know he's deeply sorry for what he did, and he hopes you can find it in your heart to forgive him. See
the
stone
sins. The DJ refuses to play the rest of the song because Ross cheated on her. He's like, we're on a break. So that's my number five, U2's With or Without You from Friends.
Good. George, what is your number five?
My number five is one of those kind of subtle things. It is The Simpsons. It is for their scene changes and things, they will do an abbreviated version of the Danny Elfman main theme.
Oh, nice.
And they'll kind of slow it down or change the instrumentation.
Yes.
But it just kind of greases the tracks to where it just flows in, just a few seconds worth flows into that next scene. So that is my number five. Nice. The Simpsons transitions.
Good rendition too. I'm going to rely on my singing also of these great incidental musics. Number five, starting off strong, Gilligan's Island was known for having some of the greatest incidental music of all time, like Skipper Walking or Gilligan in Trouble. I did like I'm just going to describe this as walking music. Gilligan will usually carry like a bucket or something at the beginning of the episode, kind of setting up adventure. And it was kind of walking music, and it went like this. And it was just something that I always like was generally, oh,
you know, 180 something episodes. We've never
I'm
had,
telling you,
but I think breaking new ground, y'all.
I think the funny part is if you listen to the theme from like the Wii, like, you know, when people are putting together their characters for Wii, they kind of like probably had, you know, watching the episode of Gilligan's Island, and it was like, do, 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 do. Do, 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 you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, wow. Anyway, you're absolutely right, Jim.
Yeah.
Nice so call lawsuit. On it.
I lawsuit. Think the Gilligan's Island walking music was ripped off, but that's my number five Gilligan's Island music where Gilligan carries a bucket.
Very good. Very good.
All right. We are on back now to female SNL characters. Joseph, you're number four.
So my number four is Kristen Wiig, but it's Penelope, her character Penelope. If you guys can remember this one, like I said, you could choose all of them, but Penelope is the one-upper. Her character basically one-ups any body, any story, she's always going to have something more tragic, better,
yeah,
whatever it is. And she always speaks in this sort of like, oh, mine is, you know, she sort of raises her voice up and stuff like that. It's just a very funny character because you see every, you know, they have her in different scenes. It's a regular character with different hosts playing different characters, and every one of them gets frustrated with Penelope, and everyone knows a Penelope. Again, it's sort of one of those things that everyone has that one person, yeah, that's always just a little bit better, story's always a little bit better and all that. So my number four is Penelope by Kristen Wiig.
All right, George, your number four.
So, you know, talking about the male-dominated casts of SNL in the past, there was a season where male cast members outnumbered women 3-1. But Molly Shannon that season broke out as the show's first true female breakout star.
Yep.
So my number four is Molly Shannon as Mary Catherine Gallagher in a skit about St. Monica's talent auditions. So Mary Catherine Gallagher, very moody, very hyperactive Catholic schoolgirl, dreams of fame, but she's got that thing where she's nervously smelling her armpit sweat. And
yes, but,
anyway, performs this rendition of Sometimes When We Touched and then Superstar, you know, and of course crashes.
Which was the movie, yeah.
That's what I was going to say. She did the character on the show 17 times, 17 sketches, and then they released a movie in 1999. Now, I personally feel that the 1999 movie, it's not as good because it's got some good moments, but I think this character and a lot of these characters work better in a shorter format.
Yeah.
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 Because to watch an hour and a half of that character, the story is heartwarming, the movie, but the sketches just, and especially the first time you see her in that talent audition thing and she just crashes through, you know, those chairs and everything, you're like, oh my gosh. I mean, she gives herself totally over to the character, which I love. But Molly Shannon is Mary Catherine Gallagher.
All right, and my number four was Debbie Downer, so that leads us back to Incidental Music or Music Cue number four for Joseph Johnson.
Okay, this is, you know, I think Incidental Music had its heyday, you know, in the late 60s, but truly the 70s was the heyday of Incidental Music. And we were bombarded by it, and people start pulling back from it because they start to realize that this is a little cliche.
Yeah, it became a cliche. Yeah.
You know, and so what ended up happening is this one show on HBO sort of brought it back. It was sort of like an homage, if you will. And what I'm talking about here is I'm talking about Curb Your Enthusiasm's Truth Stare. So there you go. It's the Truth Stare from Curb Your Enthusiasm is my number four.
Very nice. George, what is your number four?
My number four, this is so subtle, y'all might not even realize or remember it, but it's from Alfred Hitchcock Presents. And it was when they would either go to commercial or come back, there would be a single tone, very softly played, and the sound of a timpani drum being struck just very, very softly, some quarter notes, but it would evoke the tension that was about to be displayed on the program. So, and then, you know, he would also come in and narrate times, but when he would,
ladies and gentlemen, that was a timpani.
That was
a note.
Yes.
I'm alleviating the tension tonight.
Yes. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Al.
So it was kind of like a boom, or how would you sing it?
How would I sing it? I can't sing the tone in the timpani drum, but the tone would just be like, and you'd have doom, 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 doom.
I think I remember that. Like that. Very nice job. Very nice job, George. Yeah. my number four is kind of like your number five, George. It was kind of a derivative of the actual theme song of the show, and I just call it Sad Brady. this is when something would happen on the show. And either the parents were talking to them at the end, or somebody was moping in their room and it went like this. Da-na-na-na,
yes. Cue the heart, the heartfelt, you know, moment.
That's a good one.
So, yeah. So they set up that sad situation. Either something happened or, you know, Mike Brady's in there talking to
him. And what's so great about it is the theme.
Oh yeah, that's all it is. So, just play so it slower. Happy,
but when you play it slower, it's the most heartbreaking.
But it has those two, those two note changes at the end. It's
well, what it is, it's a minor. It's going from major to minor. That yeah. That's all they're doing. Yeah. Same all key, gotta, just major to minor. Make it sad.
Minor keys are sad.
Very good. All right, so that is my number four. We're on now to number three, female SNL character, and then we'll take a break. What do you got, Joseph?
My number three is pretty strong because it literally, I feel like, was part of our democracy. It changed an election in many ways. And I'm talking about Tina Fey's Sarah Palin.
My number two.
This is the social impact that her character, number one, they sort of discovered that Tina Fey sort of looked like Sarah Palin. Oh, and yeah. When they got her to do an impression, she was a dead ringer. And, you know, this is when they were using her in every opening scene, you know, intro scene there. She would always come on as Sarah Palin, so much so that they ended up getting Sarah Palin on it, you know, and people were mistaking her for being Tina Fey kind of thing. It was great. It was a great character. She's been on it so many times. And really, out of all the political impressions and all that, I feel like this was the strongest one. You're talking about a series, SNL, that has a history of having strong political satire and all that. I felt like this is the strongest character. So that's why she's my number three. George, she's your number two.
Yeah.
Tell us why.
So for those of you that might not know who Sarah Palin is or was, she was the Alaskan governor, Republican vice presidential nominee. And the first airing of this, it's Katie Couric. That was Amy Poehler, which both of them, you know, they were on the news, or whatever they call the weekend update, but October 2008. And you're right. They called it, political scientists called it the Tina Fey effect, because they did a study out of East Carolina that showed East Carolina University that showed watching the spot of her mimicking Palin actually affected young Republicans and independents, where they didn't vote to support that ticket in 2008. So there's actually scientific proof that how they had done that. But so, yeah, and you're right. It was uncanny to watch both of them side by side when Palin was a good sport about it. You know, she actually came on the show and, you know, in basically endorsing the spoof. So pretty cool. But yeah, that's my number two.
All right. What's your number three, George?
My number three is going to be, I want to be real careful how I say this. It's Anna Gasteyer, and, you know, she did Martha Stewart and all these things, but when she and Molly Shannon got an assist with Alec Baldwin in 1998, okay.
It's my number two, George. So we're
Sweaty Balls. So Alec Ready. Baldwin, he plays Pete Sweaty, who runs a bakery at, Seasons Eatings or something like that. But he's on an NPR show, The Delicious Dish, and he shares his world famous recipe for sweaty balls. And they do it with such straight faces.
And NPR-ish.
Yeah, NPR, yes, very much yeah. so.
And they'll lean into the mic. Oh, that sounds really, really fantastic. Oh, yes. Yeah. But Anna and Molly's characters are gobbling up Pete's delicious balls and just telling them how tender they are and how good they smell.
Yes.
But the side to this is the skit was so popular that a new Ben and Jerry's flavor, vanilla with a hint of rum and fudge covered rum and milk chocolate balls, they actually had, I don't know if they still have it, but Ben and Jerry's made an ice cream for this. that is my number three.
My number two, and also they went on, this is a recurring character. They did a second edition with Betty White and her muffins. And of course, yes. They made a bunch of jokes about her dry and moist muffin and all this. So this is the recurring. So this is my number two. My number three is also Molly Shannon, who made a comeback in 2023 with this character when she hosted and did a skit with the Jonas Brothers. But this skit was done multiple times. She is Sally O'Malley. And she's 50 and she can kick and she could do this. So first,
honestly, Sally O'Malley is basically Mary Catherine Gallagher grown up.
Yeah. But you have her, doing this skit when she's not 50. And then, recently doing the skit when she's past 50. So I wonder how it feels. But she, this skit, she'd always show up at a audition amongst younger people or be on a talk show and go crazy. But the latest edition with Jonas Brothers, she was doing trying to be one of their backup dancers.
They actually, she replaces one of them.
Yes, yes.
Because she's more Jonas than one of the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah, and she's 50 and she can kick. So so that character, Molly Shannon as Sally O'Malley, is my number three. We're moving on now to our intermission, which is Caitlin Presents Kangaroos.
Oh, this will be fun. Oh my God.
Oh my God. That
sounds terrifying. Oh, wow. Someone's being stabbed.
It's like Chewbacca's wife giving birth or something. What's going on? Oh,
Joey.
Yeah, there's the baby, I guess.
Yeah, a Joey. Oh my God.
This is a nightmare. You know, kangaroos can't go backwards. Just what you call a group of kangaroos?
No, what?
They call them a mob. A mob of
real
kangaroos.
A mob? Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah. I would not lie to you about this. So.
Stay away, Christopher Robin. Stay away.
All right, we're back to cue music, incidental music, whatever you want to call it. Number three, Joseph.
I am very excited about this one. This one, I feel like I'm just going to play it, and then I'm going to talk about it, because I think once I play it, everyone's going to be like,
"Wait, oh, you're going to play it and talk about it?
Really?
Wow!
You want to do that?"
Well, normally I'll talk about it and then play it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Jackasses. Okay.
Hey, Jim, when it's my turn, I'm gonna talk about mine, okay?
Okay, I'm going to talk about mine and sing mine. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
So here it is. My number three. That's it.
Wow, it's the Hawaiian Idol from Brady Bunch.
And this comes from, obviously, was it a three-parter or a two-parter?
Three-parter. I remember, like, well, we were like hanging on the edge of our seats.
The Bradys go to Hawaii. They pick up this little tiki idol that is cursed, but is sought after by Vincent Price somehow. Mm-hmm. And it's great because they use it throughout the episode when Greg nearly drowns. I think Pete is nearly bitten by a spider. And decapitated, nearly decapitated. Alice throws out her back. It's just all sorts of nightmarish things and all that. But they would use that little 2 second sound and you knew it was bad. And for some reason, like whenever I went to Hawaii and all that, of course I was looking for the Tiki Idol like everyone else was. I found it and it was super expensive. I didn't buy it because it was too expensive. But there you go. My number three is the Tiki Idol. So there you go.
And Joseph, I remember that how the part was split up. The first part is split up with the spider on Peter. And so to be continued. And the next part is they're trapped in the cave. And that's to be continued. And the third part was kind of anticlimactic with Vincent Price being an actually nice guy in the cave and getting along with the Bradys. You know, we're expecting the worst, you know, but it did not happen. So, George, what is your number three?
My number three is actually from the TV series The Twilight Zone. Okay, another tension-filled one for me. And this is after commercial. They would have these muted staccato notes on an electric guitar and slow bongos. And it would just be that little, dum, 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 you know.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Oh, nice.
Dum, 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 dum. Yeah, yep. That's some good stuff.
Not a lot to say, but, you know, bongos and creepy sci-fi. You know, what more could one want, you know?
I just hope our listeners are enjoying this as much as we are.
Yes, thank you very much.
I don't care.
My number three.
There's nobody listening to this thing after that kangaroo. After that kangaroo stuff.
That was horrifying.
Scared off, you know. Yeah. Oh, God. Do it again. That was good.
Thank you.
Can you do it again? That sounded like it.
Pretty good. My number three, the great Nelson Riddle worked with many people, did two albums for Ella Fitzgerald, Frank Sinatra, you name it, the Kings of Jazz and all that stuff like that. But he'll always remember by me as the guy who was brought in when Neil Hefti was not available to continue the music for the Batman series. He just wrote the Batman theme. But Nelson Riddle wrote all the other themes and incidental music and orchestrated it. And a lot of, I could have named any villain's theme song, but the one that comes to mind is when Joker enters the building and you hear, which is kind of like a horn laughing at you, you know, and all the Joker scenes when Cesar Romero shows up, it's usually kind of like, you know, Joker plays a joke. The one where he's playing baseball in prison. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
Yes.
And he's
yes.
got the ball with the, it explodes into a bomb and he comes out of the smoke and they have that. Such a great cue for the
least
character.
Committed actor ever. He could have shaved his mustache for the makeup, but he didn't. Put the makeup over the mustache.
Makes one of the no greatest sense. Jokers of all time. Kind of set the stage for the Jokers to come, but, yeah, so Joker's theme by Nelson Riddle on the Batman television series soundtrack, which is actually still available with all the themes. Penguin has a theme. You know, of course, Batman has a theme. There's a driving theme, as any great soundtrack has. So my number three, again, is the Joker's theme by Nelson Riddle from Batman. So we are on now to number two, female SNL skit or characters they played. Joseph, what you got?
Minor character. It just comes on weekend updates episodes. Cicely Strong's The Girl You Wish You Hadn't Started a Conversation With at a Party. Great title. This is a character of a not so bright girl that thinks that she's bright and is very judgmental and tends to be the one that points out a whole bunch of political facts that she really doesn't understand, or it's just bold face, like not getting it all, not understanding what it is. She'll sit there and talk your ear off on things like environmentalism, on feminism and things of that nature, and does it in such a way that I don't know about you guys. I've ran into this person.
Oh yeah,
at parties before where they're just talking.
I've ran into that person here on this podcast.
Okay, George. You know, it's one of those things that that every time she comes on, that she's actually done the character for over 11 seasons, and she started like in 2000. What was it, like 2020 or something like that? And she's just done it so many times with it that it's great.
I don't know when this started, but she was a cast member from 2012 to 10 years to 2022.
10 years, I guess. Yeah. To like 2012 is when started it.
She did a weekend update too, and they took her off so she could do more characters.
Yeah.
Because they felt her talent was being wasted just reading.
Yeah.
So they did that. So okay, cool. George, what is your number two?
That's gonna be the Tina Fey Sarah Palin.
My number two is Anna Gasteyer, Molly Shannon's NPR host. So we are back now to number two, incidental music cue. Joseph, what you got?
So I'm gonna talk about it first. And then okay, good. Okay.
That he tells us what to expect.
You know, this comes from Arrested Development, and it is actually homage to another television show, or shows, I should say, and that is the Charlie Brown Show. And I'm talking about when something goes wrong, they're lamenting, and the male characters are lamenting about what's happening with it, and so they're just sort of shrug their shoulders and they walk across the stage, and of course it is the Charlie Brown Christmas music, and it sounds something like this. I mean, in certain scenes, they will literally have a Snoopy house in the background.
Yeah, I just caught the red dog.
Indicated what it
was. Very funny.
Because that, you know, you hear that, you're familiar with it as a kid watching Charlie Brown. So when it comes up in the episodes, and they do this multiple times, every male character goes through it. That when they start walking, all that, I just think it's a great use of incidental music.
Yeah, that's funny. Vincent Gardaldi. Vincent G.
G, I just know it's Peanuts. Yeah. Christmas time is here. Well, that's all I know.
Christmas time is here.
Yeah. George, what is your number two?
My number two, this is the Seinfeld slap bass noise. there we go. Composed by Jonathan Wolf. Okay. It's actually not a bass, it's a keyboard with a bass sample, digitally sampled. And when they were trying to come up with a theme, okay, now remember the very first season or two of Seinfeld, they would start the show with his stand-up, and then whatever happened in the show, they would have jokes at the end where he's doing his stand-up. So it was basically, the premise of the show was, how does Jerry Seinfeld get his material for stand-up? And it was showing you that it was things that would happen day-to-day life. So because the end of the show would be him telling jokes, they didn't want the audio range to interfere with his voice while he was doing the stand-up. And so instead of using trumpets and saxophones and guitars and everything, Wolf gathered sounds from his mouth, all that. and sampled it. And then had that slap bass sound, so it could be used very modularly to kind of wind in and out of his lines without trampling on it. So,
yeah,
Seinfeld slap bass.
Slapping the bass. Okay, number two for me, Brady Bunch second entry, and this is something they used all the way up until the very last episode, where Robert Reed finally threw up his hand and said, "I quit," where they all accidentally dyed their hair orange.
That's
with Cousin Oliver. That's the show that made him quit. He said, "This is preposterous. I'm gone. I'm off the show."
Greg was graduating high school.
Yeah.
And they were dying rabbits, right?
Yeah. And Cousin Oliver, which a lot of people think is the
Death Yoko Kid.
Ono. Yeah.
He killed the show.
But the Brady Bunch from the beginning episodes and up until Cousin Oliver, they always had this trombone, like when Greg washed his hair and it was orange. You'd hear
the wobble
kind of thing. So I mean, you know, every time someone got in trouble, when Bobby put too much soap in the dryer and the washer had that whole room full of suds. it just showed you that someone was in big trouble and there's no way to get out of this situation. So it was kind of like their dark night of the soul. It was like, you know, this is a terrible situation. What's going to happen? And they cut to commercial. So the Brady in trouble trombone is my nice. Number two. So we are on now to number one female SNL character. We might have a match on this one. Joseph, what is your number one?
It goes back to the original cast. Yes. Gilda Radner yes. was one of the funniest character actors on that show. And I'm talking about the consumer affairs reporter, Roseanne Dana.
My number one.
Is yes, that your number one too?
It's a three-way match because I knew when she wasn't showing up, this had to be number one. Emily Latilla was fine, but that was just a hearing joke, basically.
Never mind.
And, you know, the Judy B word. She would say the B word to Jane Curtin too.
Yeah, and then whatchamacallit, the Girl Scout was a whole kind of improv act, and then the nerds thing she did was great, but this was the one. This is the one she really wrote, and there was this commentary that got so crazy that Jane Curtin finally said, "Yeah, Roseanna, stop talking about sweat balls and being in."
She would always just like one letter off or something, and it was like a whole different subject matter.
Yeah. So it was such a great character.
Yeah, this one. So this was actually based on a real person. This character. A lady by the name of Rose Ann Scamardella, I guess she was the eyewitness news team in New York City, and just brash and tactless like this. But you know, the thing about Gilda is when Lauren Michaels, when he started putting the cast together in 75, she was the first one he hired.
Yeah.
Saw her at Second City and everything. And so she was on for about 5 years. What's funny, she was only there 5 years from 75 to 80, but she loved this character, the whole, if it ain't one thing, it's always another. It's always something. But she loved that character so much that when she started doing her live one woman shows, she actually would include that, you know, in that, but great character.
Yes. Good three-way number one.
Yeah.
Roseanne Dana. When it didn't show up on anybody's list, I said, we're all going Gilda Radner here. Number one. I kind of,
you have to,
you have to.
And the thing is, I'm with Joseph, this list for me, I put people on and took people off and changed them around. And this was difficult to come up with just five because, as a tribute to these great female comedians, this is not easy. And even the people that I did pick, whether it's Molly Shannon or Tina Fey and stuff, like I said, Anna Gasteyer does a great Martha Stewart.
Yeah, there's a lot of good.
Their things. They've got so many roles. I didn't mention Maya Rudolph. She's got stuff. Jane Curtin, the first female co-host. On Weekend Update. So many, but good stuff. So yeah, I guess finally,
yes,
TV we're going incidental music.
Number one, Joseph, what do you got?
Number one has to come from the number one show of incidental music, which is Gilligan's Island. We have to just admit it. I don't think Jim's going to argue with me on that. This one is the wah-wah sound that a lot of other shows have used before. We always hear about it, the wah-wah-wah. But for Gilligan's Island, it always had this very unique one. And
so before you play this, Jim, he did not announce what he was about to do. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I know. I was confused.
See, I threw you off.
I was confused, and now I was dismayed, and I feel hoodwinked and led astray, and everything's run amok. Because I feel like I've been bamboozled into exactly what's going on. So what's going on? Are you going to play it?
So there you go. The
those laughs, that is the most laughs that has ever been associated with this show right here.
So this would always take place when Gilligan screwed up. So they used a lot.
Gilligan!
Quite a bit. So the wah-wah sound for Gilligan screwing up is my number one.
Very nice.
My George, number one.
Number one, yes.
Batman's spinning bat. So you have this trio of trumpets, and it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, oh, perfect. Nice. It's like 3 seconds, but that spinning logo, and that's the way they would change from one location to another, or shift in time, is da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So my number one, Batman's spinning bat.
Very good. My number one incorporated not just music, but singing, because it was from the 50s, and I'm talking about Happy Days. In this part, I would say after a warm or a happy moment, you would get this la 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 la.
The show's only an hour, Jim.
I think we need a little bit more of it.
So it's Happy Days with a bunch of singers singing la 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 the whole time, but they do that la 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 la, kind of almost like a little bit Love American style-ish, you know, because the show came from Love American style. It's kind of got that kind of same Cow Sills based kind of harmony going on with it. So my number one is the la 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 song from Happy Days after a warm happy moment. So that is my number one. So we are ready to vote.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah. So no matches on the music stuff at all. What we have to choose from, The Simpsons.
Oh man, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is this our incidental music?
This is our incidental music, because we screwed up, you know, and it's sort of a coincidence that this happens to be a episode about, you know, women empowers, because we have an email from a very disgruntled female listener of ours. Her name is Shelly Cates, and Shelly is upset with us. Because our last episode, or episode that we did 2 weeks ago, I guess, on best teachers, she's like, really? You guys are going to list all these teachers and not list the greatest teacher ever, the teacher that could take us inside the human body and explore things? She's talking about Miss Valerie Frizzle in the Magic School Bus. She goes on to say, you know, the amazing Lily Tomlin was the voice of Miss Frizzle.
That's right.
And she was really good. And that basically she taught us science and biology. She was an enthusiastic teacher. And you know what? You're right. I learned a lot from Miss Frizzle myself.
Yeah. Now, didn't you tell me one time you took a little like Hot Wheels bus and stuck it in an orifice to try to...
You're so into the show.
It didn't work.
Check it out, Magic School Bus.
Frizzle, this isn't magical at all.
You had to go to the magic dot proctologist right after that.
The magic proctologist. So you know what? We sort of screwed up on this. So I'm going to say we're sorry.
I don't agree with that.
We suck.
I did not agree with that.
I don't agree with the Miss Frizzle thing. I think it's a honorable mention at best. I think our lists were fine.
Wow. Ooh, so Jim's doubling down, saying he does not like our female audience. Okay, yes. George, half the population has just been marred by Jim. Wow. I guess he's relatable.
One thing back on the incidental music, nothing against Joseph on your Friends and your Arrested Development. It's just those were songs that were kind of already around. So I'm kind of thinking that doesn't really fit into what.
Well, let me read the list and then you can diss it.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's already arguing. The audience has already forgotten all these things.
I think someone has a Hot Wheel up his butt.
I'm trying to make things better in the future. So,
I've got a school bus for you. The Simpsons, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, the music from there, The Twilight Zone, Seinfeld slap bass noise stuff, Batman spinning bat, The Friends, the one where Rachel breaks up with Ross. Gilligan's Island, we have a couple of entries here. So Gilligan's Island, the walking music when Gilligan carries a bucket.
Inspired Wee, by the way.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Yeah, the inspire. That's why they made that game. where Larry has his holographic stare. Sad Brady from the Brady Bunch. Gilligan's sad music, the wah-wah sound when something goes wrong. Arrested Development, the sad male characters, which is basically Christmas time is here. The Brady Bunch Hawaii, the cursed tiki idol thing. Okay. The Joker's theme from Batman. Brady Bunch Troubled Trombone.
The Wobbler.
And then finally, Happy Days, Warm Moments.
La, 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 la. La, 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 la. I'll do the whole thing if you want.
You know, Joseph, I appreciate that you gathered stuff for this. So
I don't. I think you should have sang it like George and I. Be a man.
Well, I'm just thankful we didn't have any technical problems with mine because I was really sweating that.
Yeah. No, yeah. You did good. You could take Tom's job if he ever goes on strike or anything. So again, no matches at all. Okay, so Jim, why not Friends? Because it was I just an think
it
uses song?
Music that it music that existed that wasn't written as in the incidental music or cue music.
I will say my argument against that, and sorry Joseph, I think it's a funny bit, but it's not incidental. It is a part of the plot, that song. So I think the best incidental music is kind of in the background there. I mean, maybe not making a statement. So I can kind of see, I can't believe I'm agreeing with Jim, but I can kind of see when it's prominent like that, I don't think that hits the category here.
Rest of Development is more of a chance than the Friends one, only because they use it over and over again for a situation.
You know what? I hear you. And I respect your opinions. I acquiesce.
Oh, there's the
wow.
Jeez,
yeah, I think he's like upset.
Nightmares.
He's trying to get that school bus out.
Okay, so that being said,
I think we found our theme here.
It's the magic school bus. School bus.
Magic school bus. All right. So what do we say, boys? Those two are out. We say,
well, I
we
think gotta we need
put some Gilligan stuff.
Yeah, I think we need something from Gilligan and Brady Bunch. And I do like your Seinfeld slap noise. It kind of goes with the theme too of the magic school bus. If you stuff. Think that,
yeah, the slap bass definitely goes in there. That's okay. Sort of a quintessential.
And they had an episode where they had, you know, something go up someone's butt with the Fuselie Jerry episode. So that kind of goes with the magic school bus theme. So
perfect. Okay. what else?
I like the Batman. Batman.
Spinning Bat's good too.
Okay.
I just thought.
Okay.
Because you hear those, it's almost like you hear those, you know exactly what they
are. Part of the show. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I'm going to cast a vote for Wah Wah Sound from Gilligan's Island because that has become a part of the culture where wah, it's. Wah, wah. Yeah. I mean, people actually will make that sound in conversation. Yeah. Like, you know,
George, so. I think you should probably take one a year because we don't have a serious entry one either. Hitchcock or Twilight Zone, because Twilight Zone had that little staccato guitar, which was kind of cool. I remember.
I think Twilight Zone is more recognizable.
It that,
so
boom,
yep.
And then of course I would throw my vote behind Happy Days Warm Moments because of the it added vocals and it added the incidental music and it made you feel good at the end of the episode. Fonzie would go hey, la 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 la.
It kind of signaled to you everything's okay.
That's right. Wrapping it up.
Okay. Well, here's what we end up with, kids. Happy Days, Warm Moments, Gilligan's Island, Wah Wah Sound, Something's Gone Wrong, Batman Spinning Bat, Seinfeld Slap Bass, and finally. Yeah.
Excellent.
And that guy got paid. The guy got paid for
points. Yeah.
It's like, oh man, I'm running. That was due today. Oh, hang on.
And that thing plays every day around the world. He's probably just joking around. He's like, let me just do this and then see if they like it. They probably won't
that
like
that guy's it. Getting royalties from and then finally Twilight Zone. All right. So we got pretty good on the female SNL bits. We've got Anna Gasteyer and Molly Shannon with Sweaty Balls, Tina Fey as Sarah Palin, Gilda as Rosanna Dana, Rachel Dratch as Debbie Downer. So we only need one more. What we have to choose from, Kristen Wiig as Denise, Molly Shannon as Mary Catherine Gallagher, Jan Hooks and Nora Dunn, a combo as the Sweeney sisters. Kristen Wiig as Penelope, Molly Shannon as Sally O'Malley, I'm 50. And the girl that you wish you hadn't started a conversation with at a party, Cicely Strong.
You know, I think you probably should pick one of your Kristen Wiigs. She wasn't on my list because I think her character's kind of canceled out for me, you know, because a lot of them kind of were the same kind of annoying character. Not saying they weren't good. They just canceled out. A lot of them were on my honorable mention. So if you want to pick one of the two Kristen Wiigs,
I'm going to, you know what, Joseph, I'm going to give it to you. Whatever you want.
Well, I'll go with Denise because she was on my honorable mention with it. I could have made a whole list of just Kristen Wiig characters, the Target Lady, you know, so many of them.
I wasn't even sure if anybody else knew about this. This is why it's my mission to take my cell phone and show YouTube video of this. I'm glad that y'all have seen it.
Oh yeah. No,
yeah, this oh, is, yeah. They used to open the show. This used to be like an opening skit type thing, you know?
Well, the first time it aired, it was in that slot where all skits go to die.
It was the final 11:50.
Yeah. It was like the final thing. So, all right. Well, well done, gentlemen. We have Rachel Dratch as Debbie Downer.
Also incidental music in that one. Yes.
Right. We should have done that twice. Gilda Radner as Rosanna Dana. Tina Fey as Sarah Palin. Eh? And a guest star, Molly Shannon, Sweaty Balls.
MPR Peoples.
Sweaty Balls. And then Kristen Wiig as Denise, and I got a cat that I buried in the can, and I laid it up on fire, and then
nice, George.
I feel very strongly about it.
I feel very warm about you doing that, George.
Da 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 da. There we go. Well, that's it, kids. Episode 183.
That's the end of the episode. George Padgett, Joseph Johnson, Jim Kovacic, musical guest Sting.
That's such a great theme, but that's not the one they play at the end, Tom. So thanks, but yeah, I can't give you credit for that. So
good stuff.
Here we go.
Hold on.
Stuff.
Ceremony, real quick. Ceremony. Yeah. CrispyCoderRobots.com. Ceremony. We need to shoot this up. Put it back
in the ground.
Now it's time for the end.
Bury it, then shoot it up. Get the order right.
So, George, real quick, Joseph's going to walk over and get a bucket real quick while you figure out yourself out.
Okay.
I'm going to fumble it around.
Yeah, I'm going to make my Wii character here.
You can go ahead and finish the show.
Okay, I'm going to do it in NPR style here.
Okay, good.
Hey, Joseph, Jim, good show. It was a really good show.
Really
you,
good
you
show.
Did great.
Really
good show. I like your contributions, guys. That was really good.
Thank you. I like yours.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Remember, there's always tomorrow.
Is there?
Or is there?
Oh.